All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Episode 142. The Edgewood Experiments and Nazi Scientist. From 1955 to 1975, the U.S. Army Chemical Corps conducted classified medical studies at Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland. The purpose was to evaluate the impact of low-dose chemical warfare agents on military personnel and to test protective clothing and pharmaceuticals. About 7,000 soldiers took part in these experiments that involved exposure to more than 250 different chemicals, according to the Department of Defense. Some of the volunteers exhibited certain symptoms at the time of the exposure to these agents. Long-term follow-up was not planned as part of the DoD studies. A 2016 report to the DoD on long-term health effects due to the participation in these tests concluded that although effects of the individual agents had been established in this literature, test subjects would have endured lower concentrations for shorter durations and no significant effects had been observed in the health of the test subjects in the years since the test occurred. The National Academies of Science reviewed this report in 2018. Quote, review an approach to evaluating long-term health effects in Army test subjects, and suggested a framework for evaluating these exposures moving forward. The chemical agents tested included chemical warfare agents and other related agents. Inactive substances or placebos such as saline were also used. Here's an example of what was used at Edgewood. Nerve agents such as sarin and common organophosphorus and carbamate pesticides. Mustard agents. Nerve agent antidotes, atropine and scolamine. Nerve agent reactivators, the common OP antidote, 2-PAM chloride. Psychoactive agents, such as LSD, PCP, cannabinoids, and BZ. Irritants and riot control agents, alcohol and caffeine. After World War II, United States military researchers obtained formulas for the three nerve gases developed by the Nazis, tubin, sobin, and sarin, and conducted studies on them at the U.S. Army Edgewood Chemical Biological Center. These studies included a secret human subjects component at least as early as 1948, when psychological reactions were documented in Edgewood technicians. Initially, such studies focused solely on the lethality of the gases and its treatment and prevention. A classified report entitled Psychochemical Warfare, A New Concept of War, was produced in 1949 by Luther Wilson Green, technical director of the Chemical and Radiological Laboratories at Edgewood. Green called for a search for novel psychoactive compounds that would create the same debilitating mental side effects as those produced by nerve gases, but without their lethal effect. In his words, throughout recorded history, wars have been characterized by death, human misery, and the destruction of property, each major conflict being more catastrophic than the one preceding it. I am convinced that it is possible, by means of the techniques of psychochemical warfare to conquer an enemy without the wholesale killing of his people or the mass of destruction of property. In the late 1940s and early 50s, the U.S. Army worked with Harvard anesthesiologist Henry K. Beecher at its interrogation center at Camp King in Germany on the use of psychoactive compounds, mescaline, and LSD, including human subject experiments and the debriefing of former Nazi physicians and scientists who had worked along similar lines before the end of the war. In the 1950s, some officials in the U.S. Department of Defense publicly asserted that many forms of chemical and allied warfare as more humane than existing weapons. For example, certain types of psychochemicals would make it possible to paralyze temporarily entire population centers without damage to homes and other structures. Soviet advances in the same field were cited as a special incentive giving impetus to research efforts in this area, according to testimony by Major General Marshall Stubbs, the Army Chief's chemical officer. General William M. Creasy, former Chief Chemical Officer, United States Army, testified to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1959 that, provided sufficient emphasis is put behind it, I think the future lies in the psychochemicals. This was alarming enough to a Harvard psychiatrist, E. James Lieberman, that he published an article entitled Psychochemicals as Weapons in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists in 1962. Lieberman, while acknowledging that most of the military data on the research ongoing at the Army Chemical Center was secret and unpublished, asserted that there are moral imponderables, such as whether insanity, temporary or permanent, is a more humane military threat than the usual afflictions of war. The experiments. The Edgewood Arsenal human experiments took place from approximately 1948 to 1975 at the Medical Resource Laboratories, which is now known as the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Chemical Defense, at the Edgewood area, Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland. The experiments involved at least 254 chemical substances, but focus mainly on mid-spectrum incapacitants, such as LSD, THC derivatives, benzodiazepines, and BZ. Around 7,000 U.S. military personnel and 1,000 civilians were test subjects over almost three decades. A concrete result of these experiments was that BZ was weaponized, although never deployed. According to a DoD fact, the Edgewood Arsenal experiments involved the following, quote, rough breakout of volunteer hours against various experimental categories. Incapacitating compounds was 29% of volunteered hours. Lethal compounds, 14.5% of volunteer hours. Riot control compounds, 14.2% of volunteer hours. Protective equipment and clothing, 13%. Development, evaluation, and test procedures, 12%. Effects of drugs and environmental stress on human physiology mechanisms, 6%. Human factor tests with the ability to follow instructions, 2%. Other visual studies and sleep deprivation, 7%. An independent study course for continuing medical education produced by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, Health Effects from Chemical, Biological, and Radiological Weapons in October 2003, presents the following summary of the Edgewood Arsenal experiments. Renewed interest led to renewed human testing by the Department of Defense, although ultimately on a much smaller scale. Thus, between 1950 and 1975, about 6,720 soldiers took part in experiments involving exposures to 254 different chemicals conducted at the U.S. Army's laboratories at Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland. Congressional hearings into these experiments in 1974 and 75 resulted in disclosures, notification of subjects as to the nature of their chemical exposures, and ultimately to compensation for a few families of subjects who had died during the experiments. These experiments were conducted primarily to learn how various agents would affect humans. Other agencies, including the CIA and the Special Operations Division of the Department of the Army, were also reportedly involved in these studies. Only a small number of all the experiments done during this period involved mustard agents or Lewisite. Records indicate that between 1955 and 1965, of the 6,720 soldiers tested, only 147 human subjects underwent exposure to mustard agent at Edgewood. According to the 1984 NRC review, human experiments at DOD's Edgewood Arsenal involved 1,500 subjects who were experimentally exposed to irritant and blister agents, including lacrimatory agents, CN, riot control agents, CS, chlorpicrin, PS, diphenlaminochlorosine, DM, adamsite, other ocular and respiratory irritants, and mustard agents. For example, from 1958 to 1973, at least 1,366 human subjects underwent experimental exposure specifically with the riot control agent CS at Edgewood Arsenal. Of those involved in the experiments, 1,073 subjects were exposed to aerosolized CS. 180 subjects were exposed dermally. 82 subjects had both skin applications and aerosol exposures. And finally, 31 subjects experienced ocular exposure via direct CS application to their eyes. Most of these experiments involved tests of protective equipment and of subjects' ability to perform military tasks during exposure. Similarly, cholinesterase reactivators, antidotes such as 2-PAM, were tested on about 750 subjects. These agents are still used today as antidotes to organosphorus, the nerve agent poisoning, including accidental poisoning by organosphorus pesticides. About 260 subjects were experimentally exposed to various psychochemicals, including phencyclidine, also known as PCP, and 10 related synthetic analogs of the active ingredient of cannabis. The NRC report has also mentioned human experiments involving exposure of 741 soldiers to LSD. Finally, from 1962 to 1972, a total of 123 irritant chemicals were tested on only two subjects, each exposed using a wind tunnel. These irritant chemicals were selected for human testing following preliminary animal studies. The independent study corps cites mainly a three-volume study by the Institute of Medicine from 1982 to 1985. For its data and conclusions, possible long-term health effects of short-term exposure to chemical agents. Some additional information in the section cited from the course was based on a 1993 IOM study, a Veterans at Risk Health Effects of Mustard Gas and Lewisite. A significant omission from the course summary above is the number of subjects on which BZ and related compounds were tested. According to the memoirs of James Ketchum, who also cites the IOM study for the data, 2,4 belladonoid glycoates and related compounds, and were given to 1,800 subjects. The IOM study also concluded that available data suggests that long-term toxic effects and or delayed sequelae are unlikely for this type of compound. In the mid-1970s, in the wake of many health claims made regarding exposure to the agents, the U.S. Congress began investigating a possible abuse in experiments and of inadequate informed consent given to the soldiers and civilians involved. In September 1975, the Medical Research Volunteer Program was discontinued, and all resident volunteers were removed from the Edgewood installation. The founder and director of the program, Dr. Van Murray Sim, was called before Congress and chastised by outraged lawmakers who questioned the absence of follow-up care for the human volunteers. An Army investigation subsequently found no evidence of serious injuries or deaths associated with the MRVP, but deplored both the recruiting process and the informed consent approach, which they characterized as suggesting possible coercion. 1982 to 1985. The Institute of Medicine published a 3-volume report of the Edgewood research in 1982 to 1985 possible long-term health effects of short-term exposure to chemical agents. The 3 volumes were Volume 1, 2, and 3, all relating with psychochemicals and testing subjects. The National Academy of Science, which oversees the IOM, sent a questionnaire to all of the former volunteers that could be located. Approximately 60% of the total tested. The lack of a detailed record hampered the investigation. The study could not rule out long-term health effects related to exposure to the nerve agents. It concluded that whether the subjects at Edgewood incurred these changes, depression, cognitive deficits, tendency to suicide, and to what extent they might now show these effects are not known, with regard specifically to BZ. In related compounds, the IOM study concluded that available data suggests that long-term toxic effects and or delayed sequelae are unlikely. A Government Accounting Office report of May 2004, titled Chemical and Biological Defense, DOD Needs to Continue to Collect and Provide Information on Tests and Potentially Exposed Personnel, states, in 1993 and 1994, we reported that the Army Chemical Corps conducted a classified medical research program for developing incapacitating agents. This program involved testing nerve agents, nerve agent antidotes, psychochemicals, and irritants. The chemicals were given to volunteer service members at Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland, Dugway Proving Ground, Utah, and Forts Benning, Bragg, and McClellan. In total, Army documents identified 7,120 Army and Air Force personnel who participated in these tests. Further, GAO concluded that precise information on the scope and the magnitude of tests involving human subjects was not available, and the exact number of human subjects might not ever be known. The official position of the Department of Defense, based on the 3-volume set of studies by the Institute of Medicine mentioned above, is that they did not detect any significant long-term health effects on the Edgewood Arsenal volunteers. The safety record of the Edgewood Arsenal experiments was also defended in the memoirs of psychiatrist and retired Colonel James Ketchum, a key scientist. Over a period of 20 years, more than 7,000 volunteers spent an estimated total of 14,000 months at Edgewood Arsenal. To my knowledge, Not one of them died or suffered a serious illness or permanent injury. That adds up to 1,167 man-years of survival. Statistically, at least one out of 1,000 young soldiers chosen at random might be expected to expire during any one-year period. By this logic, Edgewood was possibly the safest military place in the world to spend 2 months. As late as 2014, incomplete information due to the failure to declassify and release relevant classified documents prevented the Institutes of Medicine from conducting adequate medical studies related to similar former U.S. biowarfare programs. The committee's understanding is that additional and potentially relevant material on SHAD tests exists and remains classified. The Institutes of Medicine committee requested declassification of 21 additional elements from at least 9 documents from DOD in August of 2012. In January 2014, an additional request was made for release of multiple films made of Project SHAD tests. None of the requested materials were cleared for public release as of the writing in 2016. Even a book critical of the program, written by Lynn C. Klotz and Edward J. Sylvester, acknowledges that unlike the CIA program, research subjects at Edgewood all signed informed consent forms, both a general one and another related to any experiment they were to participate in. Experiments were carried out with safety of subjects a principal focus. At Edgewood, even at the highest doses, it often took an hour or more for incapacitating effects to show. And the end effects usually did not include full incapacitation, let alone unconsciousness. After all, the Edgewood experiments were focused on disabling soldiers in combat, where there would be tactical value simply in disabling the enemy. The U.S. Army believed that legal liability could be avoided by concealing the experiments. However, once the experiments were uncovered, the U.S. Senate also concluded questionable legality of the experiments and strongly condemned them. In the Army's tests, as with those of the CIA, individual rights were subordinated to national security considerations. Informed consent and follow-up examinations of subjects were neglected in efforts to maintain the secrecy of the tests. Finally, the command and control problems which were apparent in the CIA's programs are paralleled by a lack of clear authorization and supervision in the Army's programs. In the 1990s, the law firm Morrison & Foerster agreed to take on a class-action lawsuit against the government related to the Edgewood volunteers. The plaintiffs collectively refer to themselves as the Test Vets. In 2009, a lawsuit was filed by veterans' rights organizations, Vietnam Veterans of America, and Swords to Plowshares, and 8 Edgewood veterans or their families against the CIA, the U.S. Army, and other agencies. The complaint asked for the court to determine that defendants' actions were illegal and that the defendants have a duty to notify all victims and to provide all victims with health care. In the suit, Vietnam Veterans of America versus the Central Intelligence Agency, the plaintiffs did not seek monetary damages. Instead, they sought only declaratory and injunctive relief and redress for what they claimed was several decades of neglect and the U.S. government's use of them as human guinea pigs in chemical and biological agent testing experiments. The plaintiffs cited that the use of troops to test nerve gas, psychochemicals, and thousands of other toxic chemicals or biological substances A failure to secure informed consent and other widespread failures to follow the precepts of the U.S. and international law regarding the use of human subjects, including the 1953 Wilson Directive and the Nuremberg Code. A refusal to satisfy their legal and moral obligations to locate the victims of experiments or to provide health care or compensation to them, and a deliberate destruction of evidence and files documenting their illegal actions, actions which were punctuated by fraud, deception, and a callous disregard for the value of human life. On July 24, 2013, the United States District Court Judge Claudia Wilken issued an order granting in part and denying in part plaintiff's motion for summary judgment and granting in part and denying in part defendant's motion for summary judgment. The court resolved all of the remaining claims in the case and vacated trial. The court granted the plaintiffs partial summary judgment concerning the notice claim, summarily adjudicating in plaintiff's favor, finding that the U.S. Army has an ongoing duty to warn and ordering the U.S. Army through the DVA or otherwise to provide test subjects with newly acquired information that may affect their well-being that it's learned since its original notification. Now, and in the future, as it becomes available. The court granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment with respect to the other claims. On appeal, in Vietnam Veterans of America versus the Central Intelligence Agency, a panel majority held in July 2015 that Army Regulation 70-25 created an independent duty to provide ongoing medical care to veterans who participated in U.S. chemical and biological testing programs. The prior finding held that the Army has an ongoing duty to seek out and provide notice to former test participants of any new information that could potentially affect their health. I want you to now give concern for everything that you have heard. Many times have I covered the way our government has illegally participated in human experiments, from the CIA with various uses of LSD and other types of pharmaceuticals, to the Department of Defense, to the Special Operations, and now with the Edgewood experiments that are coming to light. It is important that we take a step back and we remember Operation MKUltra, Operation Monarch, and we try to take a deep dive into just how serious these operations really were and all the clandestine agencies that were organized as ramparts around it, defended by senators and congressmen, propped up by the military-industrial complex. Even to this day, there are some victims out there who don't know who they are anymore, who don't know what they are victims of, and will be triggered by some sort of a device, a sound, a light, and then they will break out into a behavior that is unbeknownst to them, commit an atrocity, potentially, and wake up from their haze, not knowing what had just happened. We know that the special operations of the U.S. Army were testing out different various sound waves that could drive a man mad, or potentially bring a military to its knees by using frequencies. The author of this technique was former U.S. military Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, a well-known Satanist. We have to ask a question. At what point in time have people like Michael Aquino, a devout Satanist, at what point in time have they infiltrated our military, our Congress, our Senate, What gives these men the idea to experiment upon their populace, upon their own military members? I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with Nazi Germany, but I've done at least nine different shows so far on Nazi Germany and the evidence of the human experimentation is staggering. The fact that our military, our politicians, thought it necessary to grant statuses of immunization, more or less, to Nazi scientists who potentially killed tens of thousands to millions of people. It makes me question just what it is that I knew about our country, about our military, about our politics. When we say don't trust everything you hear, there's a reason why. The U.S. military, the U.S. government has been caught, has been sued, and has been ridiculed in front of Congress about its use of a human experimentation. I question right now, with everything that we see happening in this country, from the active shooters, are we seeing once again the sins of our leaders and their experiments? I know many people ask me, do I think the latest active shooters from Uvalde and from Buffalo, do I think they are MK Ultra related? I think the fact that the FBI, once again another U.S. agency involved in intelligence, was somehow or another wrapped up in all of this, even if it was just a retired agent, is very odd. It's very striking to me. I think, like many others, we should be demanding answers from our leaders. I think there's no excuse for Nazi war criminals to be operating in any type of capacity within our government. But, once again, Wernher von Braun and NASA. So to conclude this, we're going to talk about the Nazi scientists that experimented on U.S. soldiers. Now, there's not much documentation out there, but we do know that at least some of the aforementioned doctors were former Nazis, were tried and found guilty at the Nuremberg trials, and then their sentences were either commuted or they were freed from prison, and then they were brought over to the United States by Operation Paperclip. They were given disguises, given credit to do whatever they needed for their experiments to continue, and wrote a blank check. This is a list of Nazi scientists that were at Edgewoods and other scientists to mention that were brought over by Operation Paperclip. Otto Ambrose. Otto Ambrose was a German chemist and a Nazi war criminal. He is known for his wartime work on synthetic rubber, or Buna rubber, and nerve agents such as sarin and tubin. After the war, he was tried at Nuremberg and convicted of crimes against humanity for his use of slave labor at Auschwitz III, Monowitz concentration camp. Beginning in 1926, Ambrose worked at BASF in Ludwigshafen. In 1930, he spent a year studying in the Far East. From 1934, he worked at IG Farben, becoming head of their Schkopau plant in 1935. His division of IG Farben developed chemical weapons, including the nerve agent sarin in 1938 and Soman in 1944. In this capacity, he was an advisor to Karl Kroch, a company executive. The name sarin is an acronym of the initials of the discoverers, with Ambrose being the A. Ambrose then managed the IG Farben factories at Dyhenforth, which produced Tabin, a nerve agent similar to sarin, at Gendorf, which produced mustard gas, a poisonous gas originally developed and used in World War I. The Dyhenforth factory included a slave labor concentration camp with about 3,000 prisoners, who were used for the most part for the hard and dangerous work at the plant, and also as human guinea pigs in nerve gas experiments. At IG Farben, Ambrose also helped research how to produce polybutadiene rubber, which they gave the trade name Buna rubber, because it is made using butadiene and sodium. This was an important project because the war cut off Germany from raw materials for natural rubber. And in June 1944, Ambrose was awarded a prize of 1 million marks by Adolf Hitler in recognition of this work. In 1941, Ambrose selected the site for the Monowitz concentration camp and the Buna work factory, which produced Buna rubber using slave labor from the Auschwitz camp. And he then spent the rest of the war serving as plant manager of Buna Work 4 and managing director of the synthetic fuel production facility at IG Auschwitz. In 1944, Ambrose was awarded the Knight's Cross of War Merit Cross. Ambrose was arrested by the U.S. Army in 1946 at the IG Farben trial in Nuremberg in 1948. Ambrose and 23 other IG Farben executives were charged with waging wars of aggression, plunder, spoliation, and slave labor and mass murder. He was found guilty on all slave labor counts only for his role overseeing the IG Buna Work rubber plants at Monowitz, and sentenced to 8 years of confinement. Ultimately, he was released early from Landsberg prison in 1951. Monowitz was built as a work camp. It also contained labor education camps for non-Jewish prisoners perceived not up to par with the German work standards. It held approximately 12,000 prisoners, the great majority of whom were Jewish, in addition to non-Jewish criminals and political prisoners. Prisoners from Monowitz were released out by the SS to IG Farben to labor at the Buna Work, a collection of chemical factories, including those used to manufacture Buna synthetic rubber and synthetic oil. The SS charged IG Farben 3 Reichsmarks per day for unskilled workers, 4 Reichsmarks per hour for skilled workers, and 1.5 Reichsmarks for children. By 1942, the new labor camp complex of IG Farben prisoners occupied about half of its projected area, and the expansion was, for the most part, finished in the summer of 1943. The last 4 barracks were built a year later. The labor camp's population grew from 3,000 to 500 in December of 1942 to over 6,000 by the first half of 1943. By July 1944, the prisoner population was over 11,000, most of whom were Jews. Despite the increasing death rate from slave labor, starvation, executions, or other forms of murder, the demand for labor was growing and more prisoners were brought in. because the factory management insisted on removing sick and exhausted prisoners from Monowitz. People incapable of continuing the work were murdered at the death camp in Birkenau. The company argued that they had not spent large amounts of money building barracks for prisoners unfit to work. The Buna camp was described in the writings of Primo Levi, the Italian Jewish chemist and Auschwitz survivor. Otto Ambrose was released from prison in 1951. After that, he was granted clemency by the United States High Commissioner of Allied Germany, John McCloy. He became an advisor to chemical companies such as W.R. Grace, Dow Chemical, as well as the U.S. Army Chemical Corps and Konrad Adenauer. He was also advising Kimi Grunenthal in the development of thalidomide. Dr. Frederick Hoffman. Frederick Hoffman, also known as Fritz, experimented on prisoners and infected hundreds of Catholic priests with malaria in Germany. Dr. Frederick Fritz Hotzmann was a German scientist and a chemist who worked for the Luftwaffe's Technical Research Institute from the 1930s until the end of World War II. As part of his research, he was to conduct poisonous chemical experiments on human guinea pigs, selected from concentration camp inmates. He was saved from accountability after the war when he was selected for Operation Paperclip and sent to the United States. During the war, Hoffman was based in Frankfurt and Berlin, but conducted many of his experiments in the Dachau concentration camp, whose inmates were used as unwilling human subjects for his medical atrocities. A large and gregarious man who spoke English fairly well, Hoffman claimed that after the war that he had been opposed to the Nazis, but there is slim evidence to support his self-serving claims. However, Hoffman's gregariousness, ability to ingratiate himself with the victorious Allies, and willingness to turn on his former colleagues to save himself served him well. He gave evidence against other scientists and doctors during the Dachau trials after the war. Although he testified about his own involvement in the murder of 324 Czechoslovak Catholic priests who were deliberately infected with malaria to examine its effects, he still escaped punishment. Hoffman ended up in Britain as part of Operation Matchbox, the British counterpart to the American Operation Paperclip, and worked on developing synthetic poison gases in Portendown. However, he did not like living in post-war Britain and did not get along with the British researchers. So the British passed him on to the Americans, and in 1946, he was brought to the U.S. as part of Operation Paperclip. In the U.S., Hoffman went to work for the U.S. Army in Fort Detrick and at Edgewood Arsenal in Maryland, which is the center of America's biological and chemical weapons research. His research included the development of the nerve agents such as sarin and psychoactive agents such as LSD. True to the Nazi experimentation form, Hoffman's test subjects in the U.S. mainly enlisted personnel men and federal prison inmates were not told that they were being given toxins. In the 1950s, Dr. Hoffman worked on developing a variety of chemical agents for the government, such as Agent Blue, Agent White, and Agent Orange. The last was a herbicide that was used to defoliate vegetation, and its widespread use during the Vietnam War would have adverse effects on soldiers and civilians alike from both sides of the conflict. Starting in 1952, he also began working side gigs for the CIA, commencing with oxygen deprivation experiments similar to ones conducted by the Nazis on concentration camp inmates. He later joined the staff of a CIA front organization called Chemrifol Associates and worked on developing the chemicals used in the CIA's various attempts to assassinate Cuba's Fidel Castro. Hoffman finally died in 1967, having gotten away scot-free with his medical atrocities. The U.S. government figured he possessed valuable information and experience, however, so he was never charged with these crimes. Instead, he was brought to America, where Strughold held high-ranking medical positions in the Air Force as head of its School of Aviation Medicine in Texas. He then went to work for NASA as a head of Department of Space Medicine. Strughold conducted pioneering work in the physical and psychological effects of manned space flights, and his efforts helped American astronauts to successfully walk on the moon. Because of his contributions to the field, he became known as the father of space medicine. Since 1963, the Space Medicine Association has given out an annual Hubertus Strughold Award to top physicians or scientists for outstanding work in space medicine. Strughold denied participation or even knowledge of the Dachau human experimentation, and for years, most physicians and scientists in his field took him at his word, and he remained a revered figure. However, in recent years, more evidence emerged of his involvement in medical atrocities, including experiments conducted by his institute on young children from a psychiatric asylum. That made the award bearing his name an increasingly controversial honor. And then we have Kurt Blum. Kurt Blum gave concentration camp inmates cancer, infected them with typhus, and poisoned them with nerve gases. Kurt Blum was a high-ranking scientist during the Nazi era who became a deputy Reich health leader and a leader for the cancer research in the Reich Research Council. His expertise was virology, and his titles masked his actual nefarious working during World War II. He was in charge of all biological warfare, sponsored by the SS and the Wehrmacht, the German military. Despite conducting deadly experiments on prisoners at Auschwitz and elsewhere, the U.S. still intervened in his subsequent prosecution for wartime atrocities to get him off the hook, then hired him for secret work. Blum's interest was not in curing cancer, but in causing it via viruses, and in the military, use of carcinogenic substances. He also headed an institute that aimed to develop biological warfare agents, whose experts advocated attacking the U.S. with human and animal epidemic pathogens, as well as plant pests. Blum's biological warfare organization conducted lethal experiments on 1,700 inmates in the Mauthausen concentration camp. His organization also collaborated with Japan's infamous Unit 731, which was carrying out even worse biological warfare experiments on the other side of the world. Blum also experimented on concentration camp prisoners at Dachau and Buchenwald, infesting them with typhus-carrying lice in order to study how to best cause an epidemic. In 1943, he also proposed spreading the malaria amongst targeted populations artificially by dropping infected mosquitoes from airplanes. He also researched spreading animal diseases amongst British, American, and Soviet livestock from the air. In addition, he tested nerve gases such as sarin and tabin on Auschwitz inmates. He was captured after the war by U.S. Army intelligence and admitted during subsequent interrogations to numerous medical atrocities. There was ample evidence of crimes against Blohm, and he had also admitted to crimes that would have been more than enough to send him to the gallows. Nonetheless, U.S. officials intervened in a subsequent war crimes trial to get him acquitted. Soon thereafter, he was interviewed about germ warfare by representatives from Camp Dietrich, Maryland, center of America's biological warfare program. He was then hired by the U.S. Army Chemical Corps to work on top-secret chemical and biological warfare projects that remain classified to this day. Finally, we have Walter Dornberger. He was a German artillery officer and a World War II major general who was in charge of the manufacture and development of the Nazis' V-2 rockets. He also played a prominent role in other projects at the German Rocket Research Center in Peenemünde. He used slave labor in his projects, and tens of thousands of slaves were worked to death, perished of maltreatment, or were executed by Dornberger's hellish factories and work sites. Dornberger had enlisted in the German army at the outbreak of World War I, was captured late in the war, and spent 2 years in a French POW camp. Upon his release, he remained in the army, which sent him to study ballistics and engineering, and he became one of the German army's leading ballistic experts. He was put in charge of developing rockets, and in the 1930s, he teamed up with the brilliant Wernher von Braun and began perfecting the rocket engine. In 1937, the rocket program was relocated to Peenemünde, where the first V-2 Vengeance 2 rocket was successfully tested in 1942. Dornberger was in charge of developing and deploying the V-2s, and he directed the firing in roughly 3,000 rockets at London, Amsterdam, and other urban areas during the war. About 2,800 people were killed by the V-2s. Most of them were civilians. In a sad irony, more people died manufacturing the Vengeance 2 rocket than were killed by the missiles. Dornberger, who put in charge of V-2 production, had made ruthless use of slave labor, and tens of thousands of his workforce had died in atrocious working conditions. After the war, Dornberger was arrested by the British, and he was held for 2 years while being interrogated for war crimes. He got away with it. However, whenever Wernher von Braun, the brilliant rocket expert who was one of the first Germans secretly sent to the U.S. in Operation Paperclip, personally requested Dornberger's assistance. So the British released him into American custody, and Dornberger was secretly brought to the U.S. He became the chief of the U.S. Army's Weapons Department and was put in charge of America's V-2 missile development program. Afterwards, Dornberger spent 15 years as director of R&D at Bell Aircraft Corporation, helped develop the world's first surface-to-air nuclear missile, and played a role in creating the space shuttle. Upon retirement, he lived in Mexico, then returned to Germany where he died in 1980. All in all, he had a highly fulfilling post-war career despite his war crimes, for which he had at least been detained for a couple years with and being interrogated by the British intelligence. As will be seen in the next entry, Wernher von Braun, who sprung Dornberger from the British custody and got him into the U.S., got away scot-free also with his war crimes. Tomorrow, we're going to be going back over some old evidence that I brought up about Nazi scientists. And I think it's something that you need to evaluate for yourself when you see these outbreaks of strangeness happening throughout the country. 10,000 cattle dying within one sitting. All these different plagues and viruses that are happening. And then we have the outbreaks of people losing their mental faculties and massacring innocents. Relatively strange, but all of these incidents are the same type of experiments Nazi scientists were conducting in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Half of that due to the incompetence of the U.S. military in allowing these monsters to be brought to our shore. My heart goes out to all the victims and the family members of the victims that were experimented on by our own military. Do not trust what you hear. Do not trust everything you see. Question everything. There's more to come. That's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. Stay frosty.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.